It's Bill Buckley here, and it's the time of the week when we say hello to the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkalp. You can find him on Twitter, at Gadget Detective. How are you doing, Fevs?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well. Nice to have you with us. I love the fact that you just had to nip off for a moment there to deal with the parcel coming, and of course it was a piece of tech.
It was a gadget, yeah.
Of course it was a gadget. We'll talk about a gadget in a little while, but first of all, the tech news of the week. And US companies hit by a, quote, colossal cyber attack. Now, we all know about Journalese and Purple Pros, but you would say this really is a colossal attack, would you?
Yeah, so that it's been described as colossal by a security firm called Huntress Labs, who detected that a Florida-based IT company called Cassia had been targeted. And the reason why that's important is that this Florida-based software company provides the software that runs about 10,000 servers around big companies around 10 countries. Mm-hmm. So far, more than 200 of their customers have been affected. So it's believed that a Russian-linked group called Revil has launched the attack, and it's a ransomware attack. This is where they invade a system, lock up the data, encrypt it, that's to say scramble it, and then ransom the data back to the companies. And also, there's also extortion sometimes involved where they threaten to publish the data as well. So it's not just that they lock it and ransom it back, but they may also make money by selling it or publishing it and embarrassing individuals or companies. Mm. So, and they've been quite smart about it because, I mean, one of these attacks takes quite a lot of planning, you know, to hit a software company that's well protected. It's not that easy. Mm-hmm. But what they've done is by attacking the software provider that then provides software to 10,000 businesses, it's like ka-ching, because it get this malware in their software then gets distributed out to all their customers, or some of their customers at least, and then they get infected. So mm-hmm. it's like if you think of it in terms of COVID, it's what you'd call quite a high R number. So
yes,
one
yes.
Infection goes out to 10,000. So the problem with ransomware is it's extremely profitable. It works, you know, because it's very hard to lock down systems. So this is also, I think, quite interesting that it's blamed. They're not saying the Russian government necessarily, but a Russian-linked group.
You read my mind there, yes.
Well,
I was wondering.
It makes you wonder how much would actually be allowed to go on without some sort of tacit nod, isn't it? But we don't know that. And I think the timing of it is interesting because, of course, we've just had the meeting between Putin and Biden, where Biden said, you know, you've got to cut out these cyber attacks. And Putin said, what cyber attacks? You know,
yeah.
But actually, what was quite interesting was Biden was quite pragmatic. He identified 16 areas of infrastructure that we should not hack. So it's almost like we are now accepting that this form of low-level warfare, which is what it is, can go on. I mean, if it's state-sponsored, obviously it can be just commercial attacks as well. But it is interesting because it's well-timed as well, because it was sprung towards the close of business yesterday in America, which is just as everyone was clocking off for the 4th
long,
of July long weekend. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they've timed it, interestingly. And, of course, there could be a political element to that because, of course, U.S. Independence Day, you know, if you want to have a poke at the United States, then what better day to do it than on Independence Day? So it's a big problem, this. I mean, and it's something that isn't just something that attacks, you know, huge multinational companies. We as individuals can be subject to ransomware attacks as well. And the best defense against ransomware is to have regular and up-to-date backups of your data, so that if they steal it, if they scramble it, you can hopefully reinstate your own data without having to pay the ransom. Because even when people pay the ransom, there's actually no guarantee you get your data back. I mean, after all, you're dealing with criminals.
Well,
they're not necessarily
When you just said that, you know, they make a lot of money out of this, I thought, well, I hope he means because of selling on the information, not that people do give in. Because we all know you must not give in to a blackmailer, because they on and on they go, you know.
Well, the problem is, I mean, you say that, and it's absolutely right. And I don't know, I mean, obviously you're not old enough to remember this, but there was a spate of hijackings of aircraft in the, I think, the 70s and early 80s. And it was getting, you know, very frequent because people were paying, and it was only when everyone got together and said, we're not paying no matter what, that actually they stopped doing it.
Yeah.
But here we've had, you know, American police departments paying it. Gosh. We've had all, you know, government entities paying, you know, and of course the advice is not to pay. I don't know, in a lot of territories, it's not actually an offence to pay a ransom. That's the other thing. So, but these companies are being cagey about it. The only reason we know about it is because Huntress Labs spotted it, and there's something rather vague on Cassia's, the software company's website, saying they may have been attacked, but it's a small number, they say. But Huntress Labs have already detected more than 200, and you know, one has to fear that number could rise into the high hundreds or thousands even.
You don't think, to some extent, like President Biden, they're pragmatic and they factor in the cost of paying a ransom every now and again these days, do you?
Well, it's you know, police departments are not businesses, but they just get into a position where they can't afford to lose the data. So on a personal level, we back it up, and then if we're backing up onto an external drive, we remove the cable, because if the backup drive is still plugged in when we are attacked, then they scramble the backup as well.
Oh, gosh.
There's also an argument for backing up into the cloud. You can encrypt your own data and then send it into the cloud. That's to say, store it on servers, so that you've got, again, a chance of getting it back. But you've got to have frequent backups. Otherwise, you know, you could still lose. I mean, people lose all sorts of things. They lose, you know, photos of their deceased loved ones. They lose scripts that they've been working on for all their adult life but haven't quite finished. You know, all sorts of things that are irreplaceable. We have on our hard drives and SSDs, these solid state devices, and we don't really think about what happens when we lose them. And yet I hear from people every week that have lost data that they just can't afford to lose.
And it just underlines that we're all in the same boat, be you a huge multinational company or be you a person living alone in a little cottage writing your play. It's the same principle applies, yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we'll see what happens with that. We'll also see what you've picked as your gadget of the week. Bill Buckley here, Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective here as well. And it's time for the gadget of the week, and it's a smartphone this week. Do tell. Yeah.
So we looked at entry-level smartphones from Nokia last week. This is more what you might call a mid-range phone. It list prices are £500, but given that smartphones can cost well over 1,000, I suppose that makes this mid-range. It's from Google themselves. It's called the Pixel 4a 5G, not to be confused with the 4a, which isn't the 5G version. Now, Google are the company that make the Android operating system that appears on every smartphone other than those made by Apple. Mm-hmm. And normally, they give the operating system, and different manufacturers of smartphones, like, you know, Samsung or whoever, LG, Sony, whatever, will use the Android operating system and include it in their own devices. But Google brand their own range of smartphones as well, known as the Pixel range. So this is the Pixel 4a 5G. And the reason why they do that is it's kind of showing a sort of proof of concept of what can be done. Plus, there is a benefit of having a Google phone, which I'll deal with in a minute. But let me just tell you about this phone. So it's a lovely screen. It's a 6.2-inch screen from, you know, diagonal corner to corner. It's what's known as an HDR OLED screen. Let me explain. HDR means high dynamic range. That means the difference between the blackest black and the whitest white is big. And on other technologies which are not OLED, which stands for organic LED, the blacks are not really black. They're sort of a grey colour, whereas because of the way that OLED works, the blacks are truly black. And but the bright colors are very bright. So, you know, if you get a scene where, you know, maybe it's, you know, I don't know, prisoners escaping in a tunnel and you can't really see what's going on.
Yeah.
On this one, you can actually see what's going on. And the colors pop as well because it's OLED. OLED is generally considered to be the best technology. And it's got a contrast ratio of 100,000:1, which is huge. The resolution of the screen is more than full HD. So, you know, you get a full HD TV set, which might be 40 inches.
Yes.
This has got 1,080 by 2,340. So that's 413 dots per inch. on the screen.
Amazing.
Imagine.
Amazing.
The display is always on, which is nice because it can show you a clock or whatever, always on. You'll guess by the name that it's 5G capable. So this is a 5G version. 5G is the fifth generation of mobile internet, and it not only gives you super fast connectivity, but it gives you what's called low latency, so the internet's much more responsive. This is important when you for people playing games on their phones as well, but it's also really important because this is the technology that's being built into driverless cars, and they have to have a highly responsive internet, right? They can't have a lag, because you know, milliseconds can mean, you know, a big difference. In terms of the storage in it, the standard storage is 128 gigabytes of storage as standard. But unlike Apple's iPhones, this one is upgradable. You can put in a micro SD card into it, which is a little memory card about the size of the fingernail on your little finger. And that can, you know, substantially increase. So you're not stuck as you are. With iPhones, it's a bit like having a car that when the ashtrays get full, you have to buy a new car, you know.
Yes,
I know people generally
analogy.
Don't smile, but I sort of see it that way. Or when it's run out of fuel, buy a new car, you know. So it's a bit like that. So it's 128 giga standard, but expandable. It's a very generous 6 gigabytes of RAM. That's not the space in which you store things. It's the working area that it has. And the more RAM it has, and 6 gigabytes is generous, the more software programs it can run concurrently at the same time. It's got a fast 8-core processor. The battery life can go all day on a single charge. And in fact, if you switch on the extreme battery saver, which automatically limits the activity of apps in the background, you can even get up to 2 days out of a single charge, which is impressive. Mm. One of the problems with some Android phones is that you're not always guaranteed to get updates for very long. And given that those updates can include security updates, that's kind of serious. Apple have got a good track record on that. You know, I've just noticed that iOS 15, which is the new version of their software, which is coming out in the autumn, there are seven-year-old phones that will still be able to run it. So those people have had updates for 7 years. Now, Google, to their credit, have said that they are guaranteeing security updates for this phone for at least 3 years. And the other thing about it is it's called stock Android. Now, when Google produce Android and give it to, say, Samsung put a layer of their own software over the top of it because they want to differentiate their software from their competitors. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, they can sometimes make it a bit, you know, clumsy, a bit slow, and cumbersome. And it also means that in order to get the latest software on your, say, your Samsung phone, not only do Android have to produce another version that hardware is capable of running, but Samsung have to be willing to go back and do their version of it for, say, a 3 or 4 year old machine, which they may not be willing to do. So again, you may pay £500, £750, £1,000 plus for a phone, and then you don't always get the updates. But when you buy a stock Android phone, which all the Google Pixel phones are by definition, because they don't put anything over and above the standard software on their own phones, then what that means is, as long as there is a version of Android produced by Google which the hardware is capable of running, then you can install it and run it, and therefore your machine becomes useful for longer because you're getting security updates which are essential to make sure that you can use your phone safely. Or on a security point, it's got a Titan M security chip, which is like a secure enclave where it can hide passwords and so forth that hackers in theory can't get to. It's got a really clever camera. By clever, I mean not only are the optics of the camera good, but one thing that Google are really, really good at is using the powerful processor to improve the image even before it's stored into the memory. Each pixel, each dot is processed in real time to get the optimal picture. So you can actually get a much better picture in reality than the lens assembly would allow for, because it's being modified in real time as the picture is taken and stored. And that, you know, that's quite an incredible thing. Mm-hmm. And Google are masters at that. Credit to them, there's a 3.5 millimeter audio jack on it, which Apple did away with. They described their move to get rid of the headphone jack on iPhones as brave, And I think I've said to you before, I can think of other adjectives for that phrase. Isn't the one that springs immediately to mind. No. So good on Google, because it's really important. I know we've got wireless headphones, but if you're like me and you do sort of slightly clever audio things with your smartphones and tablets, having a separate audio output is really important. And there's lots of space in there that it's not like they needed the space. A headphone jack doesn't take much space. But so... well done to Google.
I sense a high rating coming here. Yes,
4.5 stars out of 5.
4.5 out of 5 is as high as he ever goes. Yeah. 499 quid. Any chance of getting it cheaper, or is that?
Yeah, sometimes you can. So that's if you buy what's called SIM-free, which is the ideal way to buy, i.e., not on a contract. So you buy it SIM-free if you can afford to, and then you choose a SIM-only contract of your choice or pay as you go. That's generally more flexible and better. And yes, there are sometimes deals. So if you look around, you might get it for less.
We shall talk in 7 days' time. That was all brilliant. He is Fevzi Turkalp. You can follow him on Twitter @GadgetDetective.